Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. The 18th example given by the saintly person to Prahlad Maharaj about the gurus he is learning from is the Kurara bird, which is a kind of small hawk. And the example given is that the hawk is carrying a lump of meat. Now, what on earth are you going to learn from a hawk carrying a lump of meat? What spiritual lesson is there? Well, there's a lesson. The hawk was attacked by bigger hawks who wanted the meat that he was carrying in his beak as he was flying. So the smaller hawk decided, they want the meat, otherwise they're going to kill me. So he dropped the meat and flew off and saved his life. So in this way he renounced the meat and saved himself, and he felt very happy. More happy than when he'd found the meat. So if someone, the example that the saintly person gave that is that if someone gets something that he wants, he generally feels elated. But then what happens is that people become greedy to get that, and one becomes the object of envy and possibly attack. So to give that up, if you get something and you lose it, you may lament. But this hawk was a transcendental hawk. He wasn't lamenting. He thought, better I save my life. So in the same way, renunciation is better than enjoyment. Of course, both renunciation and acceptance of objects for material, fulfilling material desires, and renunciation of such objects, both are illusory, because neither does anything in this world belong to us for us to enjoy. Because of that, there's nothing really for us to renounce, because it doesn't belong to us at all. Srila Prabhupada sometimes gave the example that if someone walks into a bank and announces to everyone, "Ladies and gentlemen, I renounce all the money in the bank," he's a madman, because it doesn't belong to him. But it's the sense of wanting to enjoy in this world. If one gives that up, then one can be more happy than if one is trying to enjoy this world. What is that? Pravritir sarvabhutanam nivrittistu mahapalam. Manu says that everyone in this world is engaged in trying to enjoy it, but the best result, or the biggest result one can have in this world, is to give up that idea of wanting to enjoy this world. So, of course, this is it's a beginning level of spiritual life. The more advanced level is to see everything belongs to Krishna, and engage it in His service. Another example that Srila Prabhupada gave is that if someone sees some money lying on the road and he picks it up and puts it in his pocket, he's a thief, because it doesn't belong to him. And if someone else sees it, picks it up and tries to, and says, "Someone dropped their money," tries to find the owner and return it to them. Now wait a minute. Going a step too far here. The second stage is that someone sees money and says, "It doesn't belong to me," and walks past. And then the third stage is he picks it up and says, "Someone dropped their money. Whose money is this?" So these persons are on progressively better levels. The first person is a thief. The second person is not a thief. And the third person is the benefactor of whoever lost the money, or at least he's trying to be. So in the same way, people try to enjoy the objects of this world. That is like being a thief, because everything belongs to God, to Krishna. Someone else may say, no, no, I'm not going to enjoy. I renounce all the idea of enjoying. So, well, that's somewhat better, although it's not on the fully godly platform of wanting to return it to its owner. In other words, everything in this world should be utilized for the service of Krishna. But anyway, this example is given how that, although generally people think that by getting things that I want, I will be happy. One can be more happy by giving up that mentality. Greed. One of the three great gates to hell. Trivitam narakasyedam dwaram nashanam atmanah kama krothas tatalopas tasmat etat tayantyajit. There are three doors to hell, Lord Krishna says, which are lust, greed and anger. Therefore, they should be given up. Greed. Cause of so much suffering in this world. That's stated that in, especially in Kali Yuga, all bad propensities, the personality of Kali resides in gold. What is gold? It's a piece of metal, but it's considered very valuable. It's a medium of exchange. So if you have one gold coin, you can exchange that for so many objects of sense enjoyment. So one is considered rich if he has gold. But gold, because it's a symbol or a medium for sense gratification, for gold, of course, nowadays gold is replaced to a large extent by imaginary money or digital money. But it's still the same principle applies, because if you have in your bank account $1 million, then you have more right, according to the workings of the imaginary money system. You can get $1 million worth of in purchases. Whereas if you have only $10, you can only get $10 worth of purchases. So the idea that wealth is the mean to sense enjoyment. So how much suffering is caused by wealth? How many people are killed? And how many wars are started? And how much agitation there is in the world because of wealth? Here in Kerala, it's a communist government. I checked it out. The state government is communist. Now, communism, theoretically, it's based on fairness to all, but actually it's based on envy of people who have wealth. Why should they have it? And that's what actually happened in Russia, about it was just about 100 years ago. That's not being celebrated. There's no big celebrations happened. The Bolshevik Revolution, what was that, 1916, something like that? Do they teach you in the school? Something like that. But it wasn't a big celebration or remembrance for that. About 100 years. Started off with the royal family and the aristocracy being killed. And then the whole landowning class was wiped out. Millions of people were killed in the name of being fair. And what was the crime of the people that were killed? They had more money than others, which the people who had less money wanted to take and apportion to themselves. And how much suffering. Now what's going on in Syria, the ongoing fighting, ultimately it's all about money. How much suffering is caused for the greed for wealth. So as a whole society and individually, we can become peaceful if we're not greedy for wealth. Of course, the saintly person who spoke to Prahlad Maharaj was the ultimate example of this, because he made no endeavor even to maintain his body. Whereas most people, they do something by which they do some work to maintain their body. Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, Sharira yatra pichate na prasiddhyad akarmanaha. Without working, one cannot even want to maintain one's body. That's true generally, unless one becomes a topmost paramahamsa like this saintly person. Otherwise, everyone's expected to do some work. And within the Vedic culture, it's not exactly that people get paid so much as they do their work, and then just like the Baba, he comes around and shaves people. He has once or twice a month, and then the local farmer gives him a portion of the grains that are grown. And then bits and pieces he gets here and there. People give him what his necessities. Not exactly that he's paid. So, but he has to do his work. If he doesn't do his service of being a Baba, then he won't get. People won't give him what's required to maintain himself and his family. So going on, these are just little examples which can be remembered. You might see sometimes... Have you ever seen the one hawk is in the sky and another attacks it? Maybe you've seen. You won't see so much. And they fight. When they fight, it's because one's got some food and the other one is more powerful. Might makes right is the principle. So if you ever see that, you can remember, oh, that's what the Avadhut said to Prahlad Maharaj about the hawk. And now the next example is given of a foolish child who is happy. He's happy, why? Because he's a fool. fool in the sense that he's innocent. Child, I don't even know if the children are growing up now very innocent, because from the earliest age they get all these violent computer games or video games to play with. Otherwise, children running around in the village. Here in India, until recently, within my memory, as I used to travel in the villages some 40 years ago or so, children, they would just run around naked until they were 7, 8, 9. You saw that also? You used to run around naked. They didn't bother putting clothes on them. That's all. They'd have the little string around their waist, some jingle jangle bells on their feet, and that's all. And what do you need clothes for in Tamil Nadu anyway? You're from Tamil Nadu. It never gets cold enough that you actually need clothes to keep warm. It's just a matter of decency, that's all. Actually, here in Kerala, up until 100 years ago or so, and in parts of Tamil Nadu also, it was in the lower caste women, they weren't allowed to wear anything above their waist, so they'd just walk around with bare chest. That was the caste rule. Anyway, I'm just giving that example. The children would just run around naked and play in the mud. Krishna also, that description is there. They get all dusty and dirty, and in the evening the mother would bathe the child like this. And they just play. And they laugh and sometimes fall down and cry. But they're basically happy. They feel secure and happy. And why? Because they didn't get involved in the big bad world all around them. That innocence goes away. When one gets older and is expected to interact with everyone else, with all their, everyone scheming. And so in the same way, a saintly person is happy. He's not childish, but he's childlike. In other words, he doesn't get involved with all the politics that are part of day-to-day life. He doesn't get involved in people's likes and dislikes. He's just like the child, feels fully happy because he knows my mother is there, my father is there, and everyone's looking after me. He doesn't expect anyone to behave in an inimical way toward him. The little child in the village, no one will do anything nasty toward the child. That comes, when you start getting older, that begins. So in the same way, a devotee is fully surrendered to Krishna, and he doesn't get involved in the likes or dislikes of others, and tends to see others with a good eye. He doesn't suspect others of being very bad. So like this childlike kind of innocence. Of course, for a preacher of Krishna consciousness, he has to be very cognizant of the world around him, not get cheated. Shratei shatya charat. Srila Prabhupada. Shatyama charat. Srila Prabhupada used to quote that if you're going to deal with crooked people, you have to be more crooked yourself. So Srila Prabhupada could be both very childlike and also very expert in dealing with people in this crooked world so that people push on the Krishna consciousness. But the basic point is that devotees surrender to Krishna, and like a child, he feels fully protected, and he's in this way innocent. The next example the avatar gives from his experience is of a young girl, unmarried girl, of marriageable age. Those of you from the West may not understand what this means, marriageable age. The idea is that when they start, well, it depends which community. Some communities, they marry them even as babies or 5 years old. But when they get toward puberty, they get around 10 years old, then it's time to get them married. It's the duty of the parents to find out husband. So that's all arranged by the parents of the boy who's to be married and the girl. Those words are used in the girl. Those words are used in India for unmarried male and female, boy and girl. The man may be 25 years old, he's still called a boy because he's not married. That probably comes from the time when they were married young. Srila Prabhupada used to speak about these boys and girls, referring to his disciples who are all late teens, early 20s, and to them it seemed unusual to be called boys and girls, because in American usage, a boy and a girl meant someone much younger. But anyway, there was this girl of marriageable age, and she was at home, And her parents had gone out, so she was alone at home, which is a bit unusual also, but anyway, this is how the story goes. And some people from another village came. They'd actually come to see her parents to discuss about the possibility of herself, the young girl, being married to a boy from their village, from their family. So they came, they were guests, and naturally the guests came, so from outside, from some distance, so you have to arrange a meal for them. So she went into the kitchen and started to prepare food for them. Note also that she knows how to cook. Unlike the girls that we see walking on the road here, who are, I don't know, 15 years old, presumably they don't know how to cook because they go to school. And the most important thing they have to learn how to cook, they don't know because they're busy learning all kinds of things which won't be of any use for them, either now or in the future. So, preparing food, there are different kinds of things to do, right? When you're stirring the dal, you're making the dal. You use this thing for breaking up the dal. And then pounding the rice, husking the rice. So her bracelets, which also girls used to wear, nowadays they don't because they became modern. The bracelets on her wrist started to jangle and make quite some sound. And she was afraid that the men in the next room, they would hear her bracelets jangling, and they would understand that she herself is preparing the food. So what? What's the big thing? Well, the big thing is that they would understand that she herself is preparing the food. It means they don't have servants. They're not very wealthy. So she didn't want to give the impression that they're from a family that is so poor that they can't afford servants. So then she broke off her bangles, leaving just two on each arm. But those two also jangled. So then she removed one from each arm, so she only had one on each arm, and she went on with the work, and there was no jangling. So what is the moral of this story that the Avadhut tells us? The moral is that when people live together, there will be jangling. When people live together, there'll be some clash of interest or difference of opinion. So it's better to live alone. This is really one not for devotees. Devotees are supposed to live together. Sangha Shakti Kalo Yuga. In Kali Yuga especially, we get strength by numbers. It's the Sankirtan movement. Sankirtan means everyone together chanting the names of Krishna. But that's something worth remembering, that when living together, There will be differences of opinion and this and that, but we have to tolerate for a higher cause. When people live together, unless they're Krishna conscious, there will be clashing of interests. Even then, among devotees, there may be difference of outlook. Yeah. Number 21 is very interesting. Describes about the arrow maker. Someone's sitting outside his cottage, and his job is to make arrows. You can imagine when there's a war, just like there was the Kurukshetra battle. So how many arrows were used? How many arrowheads were made? It means there must have been a huge stock. So the arrow maker goes on making arrows even when there's no sign of an imminent war, because without munitions factories, then if suddenly there's a war, then they won't be able to fight. You need The weapons need to be ready. That's why also nations like India, we're sitting in India now, they're concerned that they're always prepared for war, because at any time there can be a war. So they have to have their army and navy and air force up. They have to have numbers of men, sufficient numbers of men, sufficient trained men, sufficient aircraft, helicopters, tanks, guns, ammunitions, and so on and so on. You have to be always ready. You just can't expect that all of a sudden, within 2 or 3 days, all these things will be, you'll be able to produce them. You always have to be ready. So the arrow maker is making his arrows. He goes on making. It may go for years without usage, but then all of a sudden so many are needed. So the arrow maker is making his arrow. And arrows have to be made perfectly. If they're not perfect, they don't work. They have to be just the right length for a certain bow, the right width. They have to be aeronautically designed. If they're a little too much on one side and not enough on the other, it won't fly properly. The weight of the arrowhead, that has to be matched against the feathers at the back. It's quite a science to make arrows. Arrows are gonna be effective. So the arrow maker, the example is that the arrow maker was absorbed in making his arrow, completely absorbed. So much so that when the king came by, he didn't even notice. Now, you can imagine when the king comes by, if the king comes on the road, it's not just that the king is walking alone, but whenever the king goes, there'll be a whole retinue with trumpets and horses, and it'll be a big show, big, big thing. But the arrow maker, he didn't even notice. That all of a sudden, there were so many people and so much noise, but he was so absorbed in making his arrow that he didn't even notice that the king went past. And then afterwards people said, when he finished making the arrow, or finished that part of his job, taking his lunch at midday, and he said, you see, the king is, what king, what happened? He didn't notice at all. He was oblivious to it. So in the same way, a devotee is so absorbed in Krishna consciousness. This is the Krishna conscious purport of this, that he may not even notice the pains and pleasures of his body. He doesn't take very seriously the happenings of this material world. He's just absorbed in Krishna consciousness, absorbed in thought of Krishna. The Avadhut, who spoke to Prahlad Maharaj, said he doesn't see duality. He doesn't think in terms of this or that or the other, because he's just absorbed on the platform of spiritual consciousness. So that kind of absorption, that we become completely unaware of anything else because we're so much absorbed in thought of Krishna, that is desirable. Again, for a preacher, we have to be somewhat cognizant of this world so that we can operate within it to perform our service within it. But our aim is to be so much absorbed in thought of Krishna that practically we forget that this world exists at all. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there. Any question about this? This kind of absorption, like the arrow maker the child. This is spoken about in Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? How beyond dualities. What is that? Naprashri shit priyang prapya nodvijat prapya chapriyam stira buddhira sammudho samadukha sukhakshami. And how one is not elated on getting something good, nor distressed upon getting something bad. In happiness and distress remains in the same level of consciousness and tolerates all good and bad things. So that's spoken about in various ways. One should transcend the level of the dog who seems all day is just barking, and is all day completely disturbed. Going on barking all day. Hare Krishna. Anything? No. All right then. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Tomorrow, Krishna willing, you should finish the last few